This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Asking Ethan here what he's doing to the monitor, because if you're watching on the YouTube or the X formerly Twitter, it's got a nice, well, it did. There was a nice little slate. I think we call that a slate, Sue.
Really? What did it say?
It said the Mark Reardon Show, but it was cool. It looked really good. Was it different, Ethan?
Yeah, we usually, well, that's new today. You can thank our brand manager, Trisha Everding, for adding
look
those.
Look at so that. Be that's sure, amazing.
If you
I
can watch,
it.
If you want to see Mark Reardon and Sue Thomas's pretty faces, then, you know, go watch
look
on the
elsewhere, because we don't have them.
Yeah. Mine is typically, I never quite understand this, mine is always blocked by the microphone, so you can only see part of my face.
75% of the time, yes.
Like, if you go to the previous show, when Annie and the gang are on, it's like perfect.
Oh, is that right?
No, Annie looks like she's in studio quality. It's like portrait mode and all this. But she sits over there where Ethan is, and, you know, I'm running my own board. I'm the only damn person here that runs their own board. You've heard
Props
for empathy here along those lines.
I'll give it to you for that.
Thank you, Sue. Yes. I appreciate that. Hey, we woke up this morning, or at least I woke up this morning, to lots of pictures from Japan. Fred is there, and it was his first full day. Right now, it's in the middle of the night. What is it, like 4 in the morning?
I don't know. Hang on. I put it on my phone.
Yeah, I think it's like about 5 a.m., right? Is it 14 hours? Is that what we said yesterday?
Yeah, maybe 14.
It's 14 hours. Okay, on the world clock, it says 5 a.m. It is 5 a.m.
Yeah. He's probably just getting up. He's probably just getting going there.
You think on vacation he's getting up at 5 a.m.?
Well, yeah, because I think Marie's going to want him getting going. Yeah. And there's going to be a walk involved before they do the bus and
this
all
this 100%
stuff.
Accurate. Yeah. Yeah. I think she will have it scheduled to the end.
I will say, in the pictures that we saw, I was very delighted to see a very nice, you know, soft olive green jacket.
He had his jacket on.
Mr. Bodenheim
looked great.
He did have his rain jacket on.
There was moisture on it and everything. It looked fantastic.
Moisture. Wow.
Yes.
Well, we do miss him, but Ethan's holding down the fort. We're trying to keep things a day ahead because we can't do what Fred does, and he puts things together at the last minute all the time.
Hall of Famer.
Right. That's exactly why he is a Hall of Famer. But we have a lot to get to here this afternoon. Josh Hammer's coming up here in due time at 3:25. Look, his show is on every weekday. No, it's not every weekend, sorry, Saturdays at 1 p.m. And he's got a new book out that is out today, which is called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. He wrote a great column on Mahmoud Khalil and whether or not he should be deported. So we'll get to that with Josh here in a little bit. We have Well, this is Telephone Tuesday, so it's the second Telephone Tuesday, and we're going to find maybe the third unofficially, but we're going to take calls in the 4 o'clock hour. I've got a couple of questions to ask the audience, and I've committed to this through the end of the month, so that's today and next week. Man, my brain, I'm telling you, it's like
days,
all over the place today.
It's all right.
I have no excuse either. I slept well last night. But we'll get to Telephone Tuesday in the 4 o'clock hour. Our friend David Strom from HotAir.com, who's written about a lot of things, including something I'm about to share with you. And then my old J school friend, Chris Trevino, who's on the Mizzou and I guess the broadcast crew for Mizzou football and basketball. And we played Drake on Thursday night. Now, we're going to preview that with Chris. But Ethan, you all also got a hold of the play-by-play guy for Drake for the Bulldogs, right?
Yes. Michael Admire is going to be joining us tomorrow evening. So we're going to get both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Just on a very light note, because I sent this to Sue and I have to highlight it here this afternoon.
So cute.
There's this viral video of this golden retriever. Fox News actually blasted this out on their Twitter, and I retweeted it. You can always follow me at Mark Reardon, KFTK. But it was a golden retriever who quietly waited for help after he got himself stuck in a coffee table while his owner was in meetings. So the video is essentially this dog in a seated position. His poor little cute face
looks adorable.
He looks a little guilty because he's stuck inside this coffee table, which is not a big coffee table, but he put his head in there. He just couldn't get himself out. And then the owner kind of grabbed it, and the golden retriever was much happier after that. But that is like the most adorable viral video.
Truly is.
We need more of that. That's going to put you in a good mood today. I mentioned David Strom. Let's get into some media malpractice here this afternoon. I have to start with the CBS Evening News because this is really incredible. And when I saw this last night and I tweeted it out, I said, I don't really know whether to laugh or cry, but I'm going to go with laughter because
we are tomorrow announcing.
Hang on a second. Where did that come from? Okay. I don't even know where that came from, Ethan. Where was that? I think that was one of the computers over there.
That's the next question for you.
It was not something that I was responsible for. Now I forgot what the hell I was talking about, Sue.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
It's like
I would
the
help
afternoon.
If I could.
Media malpractice. So last night I get home and I watch this thing from the CBS Evening News right here, whatever that was, whoever's doing that. So we just have to be careful with that. This is how they started their broadcast last night. Now, like I said, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry because it's become so embarrassing what the media really does on a regular basis. And I have an even more blatant example of it here. But I decided that the right response was laughter because this is just so effing ridiculous. It's unbelievable. So here's what they did.
On this St. Patrick's Day, as millions of Americans celebrate their Irish heritage, recent events remind us that the Irish were among the first immigrants to be targeted in deportation crackdowns.
In the mid-1800s, New York and Massachusetts enforced policies to have Irish immigrants rounded up and deported.
Oh, my God.
The American Civil Liberties Union didn't exist then.
Really?
But if it had, it may have taken the legal position it is taking now, suing the Trump administration to stop what it considers to be the illegal deportation over the weekend of more than 200 migrants to El Salvador.
Oh, my God. So they want to draw a parallel. They lead their newscast going back to the 1800s. Now, I'm not a history expert, but I think the country's changed quite a bit since then. Just a little bit. I think we've made progress when it comes to race and gender inequality and all of these things that we've been fighting as a very, very, young nation to achieve. We are flawed. We're not perfect. But I hate this going back in time stuff. It's something that the mainstream media does all the time. And that was, I was thinking of how that happens. Can John Dickerson and whoever the hell else was on that anchor table sit there and say, this is really something we're proud of as a news division at CBS? Or was it like a couple of 20-somethings, this is my guess, who wrote that and decided to go with that narrative? Because they've really become a joke. You can laugh at the mainstream media. I've mentioned this before. When Trump years ago said the media is the enemy of the people, I just laughed my ass off at that. I scoffed. I thought the media is too important. We need journalism. I still believe we need journalism, but they're a joke, and they are the enemy of the people. And here's a more blatant example. The Associated Press was forced to retract a story claiming Tulsi Gabbard and Trump and Putin are very good friends. So she was actually talking about Trump and the Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, and the AP now acknowledges that. The story goes out. The Associated Press has withdrawn its story about U.S. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard saying President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are very good friends. Gabbard was talking about Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The AP will publish a corrected version of the story. Now, Sue, we've talked about this before. You know why this is a more egregious mistake than most media malfeasance out there, because AP content is delivered to local and national news outlets, KMOX, yep, KMOV, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, all over the country, sometimes with very little human involvement. The story gets blasted out. The member stations who pay for the content see it, and then they decide whether they roll with that content. They put it in a newspaper. They put it in a broadcast. So every story from the AP, including the ones that get retracted, can appear everywhere from CNN to KMOX to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, literally in a matter of moments.
Yes.
And correcting those stories. So let's say the AP issues their apology. That doesn't mean that the rest of the stories are going to be corrected, because it's not that easy. It's not like the AP can go, oh, we made a mistake, all those stories come back to us.
In fact, that might actually be missed. In other words, somebody could have ripped that for a newscast, read it, and changed shifts and never saw that there was ever even a correction.
And by the way, that's likely to have happened. So there's no other news organization. This is why I am not opposed to what the Trump administration is trying to do with the AP, because there is no news organization that has this much power and influence. And then you get to the AP style book and all that nonsense. It's the word police. So that really is something else and outrageous. Now, let me offer another example here of media malfeasance. And this one isn't too hard to really, you know, dissect and get into. It's another one of those embarrassing things. Lunch, you know, meet here this afternoon, Jeanette Fizguerra. Jeanette Fizguerra is someone who has been detained by ICE in Colorado. And the way that this is being portrayed by the mayor of Denver and representatives of the elected bodies in Colorado is embarrassing. And I'm going to explain here in a second. Here's the mayor of Denver. Oh, it's just this poor mom who works at Target, right?
A number of you have been tracking this morning information about Jeanette Fizguerra, who has been picked up by ICE. I just want to make clear people should know what this is. This is not immigration enforcement. This is Soviet-style political persecution of political dissidents under the guise of immigration enforcement. This is not someone with a criminal record. This is a mom of American citizens who works at Target and has started a community nonprofit. This is not something that makes our community safer, in my mind. I think it makes our community lawless.
So here's the reporting from Bill Malusian this afternoon. This is quite stunning. I mean, I have three separate screens of screen captures here from this story with this poor innocent mom from Target and what she has done over the years. So she is a convicted criminal, Mexican illegal alien, an immigration activist. ICE confirms that she has a final order of removal via a DOJ immigration judge and has repeatedly had due process. So you have the mayor of Denver and members of the legislature out there saying there's no due process here. No, though, there has been. She's had multiple stays of deportation. She hid in a Denver church for years. This is one of the reasons that you do want to go into churches, because they go in there to avoid deportation, and she's an immigration fugitive. So according to Bill, despite having a final order of removal stretching back to the Obama administration, several Democrat politicians in Colorado falsely claimed that she has had no due process, including Mike Johnston, who's the mayor. You just heard from him. Here's Lorena Garcia, who is a state rep.
I am feeling a lot, because last night, in the middle of the night, a woman, a mother of three, who's committed no crime except for wanting to build a better life for her family, was detained and is on expedited deportation because she stands up for her communities.
BS. That's not why she's on deportation.
Wow, complete that is
lies.
Shocking.
ICE confirms that she does have a deportation order, and she's had one for years. On February 5th, 2009, the ICE Denver office lodged an immigration detainer on Vizguerra Ramirez. On February 26th of that year, the Arapaho County Court, Centennial, Colorado, convicted her of forged instrument possession, second degree, and sentenced her to a term of 23 days in jail. I'm not exactly sure what is instrument I'd have to look that up. On February 5th, 2009, they lodged an immigration detainer on Vizguerra Ramirez. On February 27th, ICE took custody of her from the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office pursuant to the immigration detainer. On March 11th of that year, she was released from ICE custody after posting an immigration bond. On March 27th of that year, 2009, they convicted her of failure to display proof of insurance and driving without a license and ordered her to pay fines. On November 18th of 2011, a federal immigration judge denied Vizguerra Ramirez her application for relief from immigration proceedings. Now, keep in mind, this is all due process, right? She's before the judge. Yep. She's in a court. They granted her voluntary departure. That's considered an immigration benefit. She failed, however, to depart the U.S. per the terms of the order within the 60-day window. She filed an appeal with the Board of Immigration. On September 8th of that year, she self-removed to Mexico. On April 22nd, she came back because they arrested her in Candelaria, Texas, after she illegally returned to the U.S., and they referred her case for federal prosecution for illegal reentry after removal. On May 1st of 2013, the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas, Pecos Division, convicted her of illegal entry and sentenced her to 1 year of unsupervised probation. Now, why in the hell you can't have this is what's ridiculous. They find her guilty of illegal entry and she gets probation?
I know.
Well, not now. She's getting sent back. Her ass is getting sent back. That's what's happening.
Well, forced instrument, by the way, I looked it up, means intentionally creating, publishing, or circulating a fake or altered financial document or other writing with the intent to defraud
like
or deceive.
Like a license or something
or
like
an
that.
ID.
Right, exactly. On May 2nd of 2013, she entered ICE custody in El Paso, Texas, where her prior removal order was reinstated. On May 30th of 2013, they considered her case withdrawn because she departed the U.S. prior to a decision being made on her appeal. Some of this is just court blah, 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 blah. On June 7th of 2013, ICE releases her on an order of supervision because under policy at the time, she didn't meet the agency's priorities for removal. That's the Obama administration, right? On July 2nd, 2014, her application for a stay of deportation is granted until February 1st of 2015. On February 20th of 2015, ICE granted the application for stay of deportation again. On February 15th, 2017, ERO Denver denied another application for stay. Her counsel notified ICE that she would be taking sanctuary in the First Unitarian Society Church in Denver and would not be reporting to ICE as ordered. On May 11th of 2017, she received an automatic stay of removal due to Senate Bill 603. That's a private bill submitted on her behalf, and her removal was stayed until March 15th, 2019. On March 14th, 2019, she once again sought sanctuary at the First Unitarian Society Church in Denver, where she is an immigration fugitive. So now this activist, this mother, and by the way, here's a little bonus round for you. On her Facebook page here, so I'll show you the cartoon. It's a cartoon of a Native American scalping President Trump with two arrows to his chest and blood dripping out. And it says, this is how you make America great again.
Nice.
So you can't be deported simply for that, right? That is free speech here in this country. But guess what? All of the other things that they've cited you, and by the way, the original reason that they're trying to kick you out because you came here illegally and haven't gone through the process still remains. So again, you have the mayor, whatever you did, Ethan, take that back. What I don't know what you just did. My ears, I just lost contact in one ear. Whatever happens in this particular situation, she has been given a lot of due process, like a ton of due process. So the notion that the mayor of Denver, and here, Lorena Garcia once again.
Yesterday, she was here marching with us, still fighting for humanity and dignity. We have LAD because historically, buildings like this have not been open to Black and brown people. So we created a day to say, you are welcome. You are welcome in the people's house.
No, you're not welcome here
anymore.
These
people are misinformed, or they're just, I can't decide what it is. Do they willfully know this is wrong?
Yeah, I think so. They don't care. They don't care. All right, we're off and running here. Josh Hammer, he's got a new book out. He's coming up next. I'm still trying to figure out my entire role in that, man. I'm getting a lot of billing, and my agent hasn't worked all that out with Brian. I think he's going to be here tomorrow. There are some tickets available for Saturday night. And you can always go to briankilmeade.com to get the VIP tickets. I did have a listener that reached out to me because I've been saying that you can get the VIP tickets as an add-on, and they were having a difficulty doing that, so I'm trying to get the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
But it's going to be a lot of fun, and I can't believe it's almost here on Saturday night. I heard from another friend of mine, a St. Louis City cop friend, who I was unaware was a big Kilmeade fan, and he's going to be there. Then he asked, you know, because people love the team at Fox, right? He said, well, is Jesse going to be there? I'm like, no, this is Brian, not Jesse.
Just
but,
a Kilmeade
right. But I will say, and you've been at these events, Jesse and Brian have a good-natured relationship. They tease each other. You'll hear some teasing of Jesse, is my guess.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday night by Mr. Kilmeade, for sure. Hey, Josh Hammer has a show every Saturday that airs at 1 p.m. on 97.1 FM Talk. He's a regular guest. He's a great guest on a lot of different topics. And he has a new book out today called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. We've been talking about it for a while. Josh, congratulations. It is publication date, right?
Mark, it is publication date today, and there's no one I'd rather spend it with than you, my friend.
Well, awesome to have you on this day, because I know it's a big day for you with the book. Can we start, though, by, and I think this ties in, you wrote a column about Mahmoud Khalil and how his deportation would not be unlawful. Some of this ties in because, look, this is a guy who has called for the destruction of Western civilization. Your book is about how important Israel is in all this fight, but his deportation or his detention at this point really kind of plays into a lot of this, doesn't it?
It sure does. It certainly does. And Mahmoud Khalil, one, is deeply opposed to everything that this country stands for. But two, most important for just crass bread and butter legal purposes, Mark, he's not a citizen. And there are a lot of people out there. This is kind of the point of the column that I wrote for Newsweek, the Los Angeles Times. It was my syndicated column this past week. The argument that I made was that there are a lot of people out there who are trying to deliberately and on ideological grounds blur or outright eliminate the distinction between citizen and non-citizen. This is all part of the overarching globalist agenda. And a lot of people say, oh my God, how can you say that? I mean, some people say that's an anti-Semitic dog whistle. You know, good luck saying that to me, I suppose. But there actually is a globalism, let's destroy all borders, destroy all nation states agenda. It's a very real thing. It's kind of like the John Lennon song Imagine playing out on a geopolitical chessboard there. But in reality, Mark, our law is clear. There is a very big distinction between citizen and non-citizen. So to take just one example there, Justice Robert Jackson, one of the great justices on the Supreme Court in the 20th century, a champion of due process. He was the great dissenter in the Japanese internment case, Korematsu, from the FDR presidency, World War II. 9 years after that, though, in 1953, in a case called Shaughnessy, it was Justice Robert Jackson, this great champion of due process, who wrote in his opinion that due process does not give an alien a right to come to this country. And once the alien is here, it does not give him the right to stay here against the people's will. That's what it boils down to. If you are an alien, if you are not a citizen, whether you are on a student visa, a green card, or anything in between, Mark, if we the people ultimately decide that we don't want you here, we can kick you out. That's basically it. That's the law, pretty much, period, full stop, end of story.
And I kind of support that. And I don't know, do you think that the circumstances of the Brown University professor, who is also a doctor, I guess this is Dr. Rasha Aliwa, is the same circumstance, because she had a valid work visa that was issued recently, but she went to the funeral of a Hamas leader, and that was what the administration is, I guess, deportation, or ICE, is citing her for. I don't know which organization. I guess it's Homeland Security. Same rules apply to her, you think, or not?
Yeah, exact same rules, because again, she's not a citizen. She's here on a visa, but she's a legal alien. I mean, Mahmoud Khalil was also a legal alien. He was here on a green card, which is basically the highest, I suppose, that you can be as legal alien. You're a legal permanent resident at this point. But the key distinction for purposes of due process, and frankly on many other grounds too, I mean, the Bill of Rights is a good example here. I mean, the entirety of the Bill of Rights is absolutely secured for U.S. citizens. That's one of the purposes of being a citizen, but it does not necessarily apply the exact same way to non-citizens. The case on this is actually very murky. There are some amendments that do apply. But for instance, the Second Amendment is a good example. If you're a citizen, you can go into your gun store, and assuming that you are of legal age and you pass the background check, you can purchase a firearm. That's not true if you're an alien. Even if you are here legally, even if you're here on a legal visa, it's not nearly as easy to go in and acquire a firearm. So the law is just genuinely different in many respects for citizens versus non-citizens.
Yeah, that is an interesting comparison there. I never thought of that before. Josh Hammer is my guest. His new book, Israel and Civilization, is out today. All right, you make the case in the book, Josh. We've talked about this before, that it's imperative that Western Jews and Christians stand together shoulder to shoulder like never before. Why is that?
Well, Mark, I'm really delighted to be talking with you about this. So I have been talking about this for many years now. Look, I, like many others, was just so disgusted, obviously, by October 7th itself, but above all, by the global reaction to October 7th, where we had a moment there where the world basically looked at the Jewish state, the Holy Land, the birthplace of Western civilization on the one hand, and then this medieval Islamist death cult trying to take us back to the 7th century on the other hand. And you had a lot of people on university campuses and academia and just generally elite circles on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean who said, oh yeah, I'll side with the latter, not the former. And that was just a total five-alarm fire. So I took it upon myself to write this book, which basically calls for Jews and Christians alike to lock arms like never before and to rediscover our joint, mutual, shared biblical inheritance, an inheritance that would have been broadly recognized for instance, the American founders. The American founders were men who were intimately familiar with the Hebrew Bible, with the Hebrew scriptures, with the Old Testament there. I mean, look at the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, for instance. It's inscribed with Leviticus on the outside. You shall proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all the inhabitants thereof. You had Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, who wanted the national seal of the United States to be Moses parting the Red Sea. My personal favorite figure in American history, Abraham Lincoln, who famously described Americans just on the precipice of the Civil War as an almost chosen people, deliberately using the covenantal language of the Hebrew scriptures. Lincoln actually quoted the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, more often in his speeches than he did the New Testament. So I'm really just encouraging Jews and Christians to rediscover all of this. And I demonstrate in painstaking detail in some of the earlier chapters of this book just how much of the common law, of the constitutional order, frankly, just also day-to-day moral and ethical paradigms that we take for granted. I mean, something as simple, as prosaic as the golden rule. I mean, treat others as you'd like to be treated. Yeah. I mean, where does that come from? That comes from Leviticus chapter 19. I mean, treat your fellow, treat a stranger as your fellow. It's all right there if we would bother to look. So at a time like now, where it's not just the woke DEI left, but increasingly also, tragically, it's a small but nonetheless loud and perhaps, dare I say, even growing segment of the online right that is calling for us to separate, for Christians and Jews to no longer tag team together, for the U.S. and Israel to no longer have close relations. I think it was really time for someone to write this book and say, no, we are stronger together. We have the exact same enemies. Wokeism, Islamism, global neoliberalism are the three that I argue for in the book. And praise God, Mark, the book's been selling like wildfire. It was number three on Amazon yesterday. It was actually temporarily out of stock on Amazon this morning. I think that's fixed by now, but people seem to be buying it, and I really hope that the word gets out there.
I mean, and you wrote this book before, I'm guessing this was finalized before the election, or did you have to finalize it right after the election? Because my question would be, if we're staying, you make the case that we're standing at this civilizational inflection point, and I think you're right, but boy, the attack against that is certainly a lot different than it would have been if Kamala Harris was in the White House right now.
No doubt about that. And I finished drafting the manuscript in October. I probably made my absolute final tiny tweaks, I guess, in December. So it would have been after the election. But there's not really a whole lot of post-2024 election content in the book. So for instance, Bashar al-Assad in Syria, I was not able to account for that because the manuscript was just basically finished by then. So we are living in very different times right now. That is for sure. When it comes to U.S.-Israel relations, than we would have otherwise been in a, God help us, Kamala Harris presidency. And, you know, Mark, we've seen the collapse of this very fragile ceasefire in Gaza over the past 24 or 48 hours or so. Hamas, of course, is itself only to blame for that. They are the only party to blame here. They had every opportunity to prolong the ceasefire, and they basically said no. And Donald Trump has clearly indicate that he will stand with Israel and support them diplomatically, militarily, whatever they want. So the ball is really in Prime Minister Netanyahu's court right now, and I'm happy, Mark, that it looks like he finally is ready to actually try to finish the job this time. This war has been going on a long time, but Israel announced a war aim at the outset of the war of eradicating Hamas, and unless and until they do that, they probably will have lost the war, tragically. They got
to
do it.
Josh, it's stunning to me as a non-Jew, and I think a lot of people would put themselves in this category, how much anti-Semitism has been exposed, especially on college campuses. And I think we've, you know, been reminded of this in the past couple of weeks with this, you know, Mahmoud Khalil situation. You know, what happened at Columbia, what happened at Harvard, what happened at some of these other Ivy League universities. Luckily here in St. Louis at Wash U, they put the kibosh on it relatively quickly. But the Jew hatred that has been exposed on a regular basis, and by the way, I don't think it's really died down that much since that fateful date, is really kind of stunning to people like me looking at it from the outside.
It's tragic. It is nothing short of tragic. And Mark, another thing that I argue at great length in this book is to make the case that people should care about anti-Semitism regardless of whether or not you're Jewish, for a very simple reason. Well, two reasons, really, and they're related. One is that it's never actually about the Jews. It always starts with the Saturday people, but the Sunday people is always the ultimate target. So Karl Marx is a perfect example of this. Karl Marx has this infamously anti-Semitic essay from the early 1840s called On the Jewish Question. He himself was a self-hating Jew. He clearly harbored a unique disdain for Judaism, but that wasn't his actual goal. His goal was nothing less than the overthrowing of Western free market capitalism and Western Christendom, Western Christian civilization. So he viewed the Jews as just a convenient stepping stone towards a broader civilizational assault. And, you know, more generally speaking, Mark, you know, historically, I can't think of a single example, literally not a single one, of a nation state that has discriminated against the Jews, has oppressed the Jews, has generally treated them poorly, and then was better off for it. Yeah. There is a very clear trajectory here that basically how go the Jews, how go the canary in the coal mine, so goes the society. And there's a reason for that, which is that anti-Semitism is here, there, and everywhere symptomatic of a broader societal or cultural rot. So I care about this flare-up not merely for self-interested reasons as an American Jew, but also just as an American patriot, as someone who simply cares about the future of his country, as someone born on Lincoln's birthday who clerked for a federal judge. I'm a lawyer. I love this country. I love this Constitution. I love everything about it. And I see anti-Semitism, and it's like, oh, my God. I mean, what could come next year? I mean, this has never, ever, ever ended well, and it's time to nip this in the bud right now.
Josh, congratulations on the new book. It's out today. It's called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. You mentioned the LA Times piece. You know, when I woke up on Saturday morning, I go to all these sources, even sometimes on the weekend, and I saw your column about Mahmoud Khalil, and I texted you right away. I was encouraged that Josh Hammer and like a guy like Scott Jennings is now on the editorial board of the LA Times. But do you have a regular gig with the LA Times where they're publishing stuff?
So they run my syndicated column. So good. I file a weekly syndicated column through Creator Syndicate. And that's actually a fairly recent thing. LA Times just picked up the column maybe about a month and a half ago or so. So, you know, the owner of the LA Times is trending right of center, it seems. So it's a very, very interesting time between that and Jeff Bezos at the Washington Post to be involved in these large newspapers. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, Scott Jennings and I mentioned it. We're very close and we've talked about this because Patrick had reached out to him in the aftermath of his appearances on CNN. Really, Jennings kind of started taking off after the first debate in June, and he does seem open to having more voices. So for me to open up the LA Times on my computer on Saturday morning and to see a piece by you, that was different, and that was a very good difference in what I'm used to seeing in that newspaper. So I have a little hope for the legacy media, if you will, Josh. But congratulations again on the book, and keep us posted on everything.
You bet, Mar. Thank you so much.
You hear his show, by the way, every Saturday, 1 p.m., the Josh Hammer Show, right here on 97.1 FM Talk. We're coming back with more. Hang in there. Fish Fry Fridays. We have another one this week at the Assumption Paris. You know what, Sue? I'm going to have to, you know, you have the list in front of you.
You're going to have to scratch
off. My brain is defaulting to the previous one.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to do that. So here, let's cross all that out here. Assumption Parish on Mattis Road in South County this Friday, then Queen of All Saints next Friday. I just heard from George Gray from The Price is Right. He believes that he can be at next Friday's Fish Fry.
Nice.
Maybe doing a live Price is Wrong. So that's coming up next week. Hey, I wanted to share this. This is kind of brutal. This is a guy who used to be on The Bachelor. I don't watch the show. I don't know who this guy is.
Me neither.
But we're dog owners, right?
Yes.
And he went on Instagram yesterday, and he basically even said, look, I guess you could say our family's been through something pretty traumatic. I've debated on whether we should share this publicly, but I figured you guys are going to ask questions and probably see things.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
So I might as well get ahead of it. So this was something that took place on Thursday. He was having some friends over to barbecue on his patio. It was a nice night. And then he's going to kind of tell you the story from there.
So on Thursday, I was having some friends of mine over to barbecue. Catherine took the kids to the mall. And we're just barbecuing here on my patio. And it was a really nice night. So I had the doors and windows open. And some of the smoke from the barbecue started to drift inside, and our smoke alarm started going off. And so I grab a dish rag, and I'm going over to, and I waft the smoke away from the smoke alarm because the siren was insanely loud. And as I'm holding the dish rag, Moose comes up and like bites it and kind of nips my finger really aggressively, which is something that he does not do.
Moose is a boxer, and you know, this guy, he's not had this dog for that long, but he's never done anything like this.
You know, I kind of gave him a no, Moose. And again, the siren's just blaring. And then he goes and starts to bite my feet. And like, he's kind of done this before. Like, if you have a herding dog, you're probably familiar with this, where they kind of nip the heels, but he never really bites. Well, he was biting my feet so hard, he actually put holes in my shoes, and it was hurting my feet. So at this point, again, there's so much chaos going on with the alarm going off. I give him like a very stern, like, Moose, no, no. And it was right about that moment where he shows his teeth at me and just attacks me. And I don't mean like bite and run off like a lot of dogs do when they're scared or defensive. I mean, attacks me.
So he's bleeding badly. He says that Moose goes into the backyard, and then I'm going to rush through this because I have the audio, but I don't have time.
I know
to
what it is.
He says he comes back through the door and attacks him for a second time, and he says, I'm not trying to be dramatic, but I honestly felt like I'm fighting for my life here against the dog. Not just a dog, my dog, right? He's like, my dog. We've only had him for under 3 months, but he's my dog. But it had to be that siren.
Yeah. Listen, they attack instability, and that guy was freaking out. That happened to me with one of mine when I was trying to get a dog out of the fence who was caught, and I was freaking out and trying to get him out, and one of mine jumped up, not the current ones, but got a piece of me, just because
right.
They can't handle
yeah.
instability.
Right.
So the calmer you can be, that will not happen.
And unfortunately, mm-hmm. it was, and then they had to get rid of the dog.
And oh, that's
I don't think they have,
fault.
I know. And he's heartbroken by it. Look, But look, you're in a situation, you have kids, what are you going to do, right?
I get it.
Yep. All right, Susan News coming up. I had Natasha Bedingfield on the bumper list yesterday, but I replaced it with the Young Dubliners, because of St. Patrick's Day. But Ethan Hannaford in particular requested this one to go back into the rotation. And I heard this one a long time, so I like it. You know this song, Sue?
Oh, please. It's an K-E-Z-K Constant Companion.
Yeah. So you're probably sick and tired of it, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. My wife has songs that, and I kind of know which songs they are right now, like Rome by the B-52s, that she just hates because she was, you know, for a stretch, Becky was in radio. I didn't know that. She was on the promotion side of, WKTI, which was an FM station that I worked in the same building at, and then she went over to Clear Channel, which was Clear Channel. So there are songs that she heard so many times when she was working at KTI. Yeah. She's like, okay, I don't need that. But I do like Natasha Bedingfield. Yeah. I like her brother quite a bit. Daniel, he's a really good entertainer as well. So I have to play this on a musical note just because I thought it was immensely entertaining. I don't even know if he's back yet, but have you followed our friend Kenny Wallace and his trip to Vegas?
Okay, first of all, the shot of he and Miss Kim on the airplane was so adorable I couldn't take it.
Well, have you heard this, though? Listen, they went and saw Rod Stewart, and Kenny's singing here. Check it out. He's belting it out. Look. Do you think I'm sexy? Here we go.
Come on, Kimmy, let me know. Touch me, come on, sugar, let me know.
Yeah, the problem is that Rod Stewart probably doesn't have much of a voice up. I think Kenny's voice is arguably better than Rod's at this point. He's 80 years old, and he's still out there. I saw him maybe 10 or 12 years ago, and the voice was not very good then. So I can't imagine what it is now.
I thought the funniest part of that video was the whole time Kim, his wife, is like looking at him like, and like yeah. at the camera.
Like, Kenny, shut up. I'm watching the concert.
Putting her index finger over her mouth saying like, hey, quiet, yeah. stop singing. That's enough of that. Yeah.
That's really hilarious.
I think Kim wanted to hear Rod and Kenny wanted to hear Kenny. But it was very romantic and they have a great relationship.
Too.
But I thought it was awesome. And you know, Vegas is my second home. Hey, I want to throw a plug out for something here that I cannot participate in for a couple of different reasons. I'll explain here in a second. But you know that I'm very fond of, and I made this discovery about a year ago. It was last April when my daughter and I, she's actually at the farm in Howard County right now where we adopted, or we didn't really adopt, we just took home a bunny.
Yes.
A Dutch bunny that Alexa named Oreo. And my thought at the time was, cute little bunny, we'll take it out every once in a while, go back in the cage. But no, I have a free roaming rabbit in my house. He's out right now, and he does great. He uses his litter box. A lot of people are surprised by that.
That's
so
impressive.
After we got the rabbit, I started doing some research, and we realized that there was an organization out there called the Missouri House Rabbit Rescue, and it's literally 5 minutes from my house. Well, it was 5 minutes before they shut down Hillsborough Road. Now it's further. But it's in Fenton. It's near 141 and 44. You have to be a member, so people can't go in and just buy stuff in there unless you pay. I mean, it's $25 a year or something like that. But I bring it up because this Saturday, they are having a trivia night. And this organization, and if you went in there, Sue, as an animal lover, there's all volunteers. There's a lot of bunnies that are up for adoption. I buy my litter. Actually, it's wood pellets. That's what I use for the litter. And my hay there and some treats for the bunny. And it's a really good price. But they're holding a trivia night this Saturday night. And I can't be there because of Kilmeade. Also, I do not do trivia nights because I can't stand them. But everyone else should have a great time. Okay? I just want to be clear.
That's fair.
Yeah. I used to host these things and MC. And then I got so sick and tired of people yelling at me for the answers, like I had some control. So I really don't do it anymore. But they are doing this, and they got tables and auctions and stuff like that. And if you go to I'm going to make sure that I get the website right, because I don't want to give that out wrong. Hold on. Morabbit.org, and you can find out more about the House Rabbit Society, and there's information up there about the trivia night, which is this Saturday. They raise a lot of money. They're going to have this at TASK, which is Team Activities for Special Kids on Horan Drive in Fenton. So there you go. They didn't even ask me to do that. I just wanted to do it because I like the organization, Sue. How about that?
That's great.
Check it out. We got Sue's News coming up here for a Tuesday afternoon, and then we're coming back with some phone calls on 97.1 FM Talk.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, it's National Sloppy Joe Day. Remember this from last year?
Heck yeah.
Ethan, were you here for National Sloppy Joe Day last year?
I don't think that I was.
Okay, no. How do you like them? Is it a manwich situation out of a can? Does Mama Hannaford, or did she, in your ute, make it herself? How did it go?
Mama Hannaford, we had Sloppy Joes a decent amount growing up, and it was one of those foods. I think you talked about this yesterday, Mark, how you'll kind of go through phases with food.
Yeah, right.
There was a point when I was really young that I loved them, and then I had them so much that I got really tired of them.
Uh-huh.
Now I haven't had one in so long. Like, you bring it up, I'm like, I could go for a solid
hankering.
Sloppy
That's
Joe.
That's the word
right
I
now.
Would use.
My mom makes great Sloppy Joes.
My mom did, too. Here's a new twist that I've got on it. I now have been picturing it with cheese. Has anyone had one with cheese?
I never have.
This is a thought that I've had.
I have, yes.
What kind?
Colby Jack.
Oh,
just,
I like
you just
a Colby
melt,
Jack.
Melt a little bit
on
there.
Yep. There. Mm-hmm.
You would put cheese on regular ground beef for burgers.
Exactly.
So, you know, my mom used to make great Sloppy Joes, too, and I honestly don't know if it was from a can or just homemade. I think it was homemade. I tried to make some homemade last year, and I think I did pretty well. But this is another one of those situations where I'm held back from enjoying all the food that's on the planet. Like I mentioned, corned beef and cabbage.
Why?
Becky doesn't do that, so I'm not getting corned beef and cabbage.
My wife's the same way.
She's not into Sloppy Joes, so if I'm doing a sloppy Joe, I'm on my own. I have to go rogue.
Oh. But Alexa should be experiencing the sloppy Joe. Does she get it at school?
She's not into that as much. Oh, yeah, but she doesn't request them very much. I think I'm the one that likes them in the family. Nobody else does.
Yeah, that's fair.
But now you've inspired me for tonight, Sue.
Yeah,
Now I'm like, man.
That sounds really
kinda
good.
It does, doesn't it?
Man, I hadn't thought. A Colby Jack is a great cheese for that, Ethan. Thank you for that. And on this day in history, 175 years ago, this is in 1850, Henry Wells and William Fargo founded American Express. It was a shipping company. That's how old it is. 175 years.
Wait, what were the names?
Henry Wells and Fargo. That's right.
That's not what I was
just kidding.
Expecting.
Yes, they then, of course, did Wells Fargo. That was 2 years later, though, in 1852 when they organized that. So American Express was before Wells Fargo.
That is fascinating, though.
Isn't
really.
It?
And, you know, I don't think I've really given much thought to why it's called American Express, but now it makes a whole lot more sense.
Yep.
That could have been a good random fact of the day also.
It
that could have fit in there as well.
You're right.
But
you're
it's on this day in history. Sue's News has to make decisions, understand.
Mm-hmm.
And 40 years ago today, in 1985, baseball commissioner Peter Uberoff, is that how you say it? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Reinstated Hall of Fame stars Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays. And I thought, what did they get banned for? They had been banned from baseball after accepting PR jobs with casinos. So they actually banned them for that and then let them back in.
Yeah, because they, you know, take the gambling part
takes,
seriously.
That's right.
Per Pete Rose example. That's interesting, though. I didn't
it
know
is,
that.
Isn't it? And I turned on Channel 2 this morning a little after 5 a.m. because they will send up drones for traffic if something happens. That's why I do, too. Mm-hmm. And instead of news, it was the Cubs versus the Dodgers in Tokyo. Did you guys watch any of it?
I didn't watch any of
it, but
I happened to be up a couple of times this morning, and I did see some scoring updates.
Well, you're telling me it was on regular Fox?
Yeah, normal Fox.
I did not know that.
In fact, there was no Channel 2 morning show. That's all there was.
Do you know if second game is tonight, or do they take a day?
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
It's tomorrow morning.
Same time.
Shohei, I believe, pitches tomorrow.
Yeah, so the Dodgers won, right?
5-1? 4-1?
Oh,
but
I don't know what the
all I've was. Seen is I've seen a lot of jokes about the Cardinals are tied for first place in the National League Central.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, here's something I saw this morning. The Athletic, which is part of the New York Times now, they put out their they do all these rankings and stuff like that. So they did the fan confidence thing recently, but this was the power rankings, all right? The power rankings. A lot of organizations, ESPN does their power rankings, CBS Sports. You want to take a stab here?
I know the answer, so I'm gonna
They're going to fall?
Where will they fall in the
division or the
the whole
the league,
all of Major
all
League
30
Baseball
teams?
Where would they fall in all 30 teams in baseball? The
18.
St. Louis Cardinals, the historic St. Louis Cardinals.
18.
No, you want to try again?
Lower.
Yeah.
25.
Lower.
No.
24. Wait. Well, lower than 25.
Okay.
24.
Oh.
24.
Oh.
We're the freaking St. Louis Cardinals, and we're power ranked. Now, you can move up and down that power ranking if you move, if you win and you do things. We'll see.
It might be okay. It might be okay.
I love that. That's the slogan for the Cardinals.
It might be okay.
It might be okay. That'll draw them in, the 3 million fans.
That's way too accurate.
I don't think we're going to pitch that to Joe Strom over at the Cardinals.
By the way, I did look for Fred in the audience today, or the crew, just to see if he decided to go to the game. I couldn't find him, but it's bizarre to see all mostly Japanese people in the crowd. It's just a kind of a weird thing. And they, of course, went crazy for every Japanese player. It was kind of cool to watch.
Except for, didn't they give Ohtani like the silent treatment or something like that?
No.
Oh, I thought I saw that.
Uh-uh.
Okay.
Uh-uh.
I'm wrong
about
that. I saw
them do it. Okay, since we failed so miserably yesterday, we didn't even manage to wear green. I thought we'd make up for it. We're going to play because Rory McIlroy had a lot to celebrate yesterday. He, as an Irishman, won the Players on St. Patrick's Day because they had to do a three-hole aggregate playoff to determine the winner, and he won by 2 strokes. So here he is talking
about,
it. Yes.
Yeah, that he won on St. Patrick's Day, but yes.
And McIlroy's got another Players title.
Rory, it took one more day than you would have liked, but you are the 51st Players champion and making the Irish happy on St. Patrick's Day.
Unbelievably proud and happy to win my second Players championship. And I think this is the third time I've won on St. Patrick's Day, so it's been a good luck charm.
So he just had to wait for Monday.
Yes.
The dude that finished second, you know, we were talking about the island hole when Dan Reardon was on last week.
Yeah.
He hit the water. And it was kind of over right then, I think. But congratulations to Rory. I mean, he's barely scraping by these days, so he needs that $4.5 million for
sure. Of course
he
does. Do you notice he kind of kicks up the brogue, the Irish there for the Irish
interview?
You can't
really blame him, can you?
No, I like it. It just made me happy.
That's a big win for Rory. It really is.
Is he kind of like the fan favorite now, Rory?
I think only because a lot of those guys ditched out to LIV.
Yes.
You know, we don't see him anymore. Right?
Crowd's not a fan of
that. Crowd didn't like that at all.
He's one of the few names I know now, so I'm like, yay, Rory.
He's been around for a long time. Over 15 years he's been around now.
KFC has come out with a new food. It's very important. It's fried mashed potato poppers. Oh, yes. You could get them on their own with a side of gravy in a new Dunkit bucket. I just have to watch how I say that. Which includes their original recipe, tenders, fries, and various dunking sauces. Now, it really is mashed potatoes that are kind of breaded and fried. You could choose from 3 sauces, warm gravy, which never sounds good to me. You should not call warm, just gravy.
That was my band name in the 80s, warm gravy.
Honey barbecue, honey mustard, sweet and sour ranch, buffalo ranch. Now, apparently they do these things. The mashed potato poppers were inspired by what they call mashies in Australia, because they have them regularly over there.
Doesn't sound too bad.
No, Ethan, you look suspicious.
I don't know. Mashed potatoes are so perfect the way they are. Why do you have to mess with them?
I agree, but if you deep fry anything, it's generally better.
Yeah, you got a point.
We've got the site called Word Unscrambler using Google Trends to find the most searched abbreviations of the year so far. And
I said to Ethan when I walked in today, you know, I wonder if we're going to cover the best abbreviations of the year.
Okay,
I said, I'm not Sue Thomas or Fred Bottomer. I don't know that kind of stuff.
If I were to say to you, TBH, what does it mean? If someone says that to you in a text.
Mark?
I always have to Google this stuff.
To be honest.
But let me just tell you, I couldn't tell you that off the top of my head.
Of course not. That's why people look it up.
When the youngins, you know, send stuff like that, I'm like, oh, what does that mean?
That's exactly why they're using this.
Right, okay.
Okay, OTP, Ethan.
Ooh.
No idea.
I don't know that one.
This one's romantic. One true pairing.
Oh,
a romantic couple you're rooting for.
Never heard that
OTP.
One.
OTP.
Okay, good.
ATP.
ATP?
Oh, I don't know that one either.
At this point.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
There's one I'm afraid to say because I'm afraid I'll curse.
Do it anyway.
Okay.
Fred's not here.
F-A-F-O.
I know that one.
What is that one?
F around and find out.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that'd be perfect for Mark because he loves the cursing.
Oh, I do love the cursing.
It's perfect for you.
Fond of profanity. Yeah, I don't think I knew that one.
Well, I got your new one.
I'm not even. I really do have to Google this stuff a lot.
Me too. This is why the whole story is out there, because the rest of us are like, say what?
Makes sense, Sue.
And finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. This is for Mark. Carrots are actually bad for rabbits.
But yeah, we don't give them a lot of carrots. Yeah. They say that because, look, carrots are,
starch,
I think, more
and
sugary.
Sweet. Yeah.
Right.
Mm. Sweet and starchy. But because of Bugs Bunny, pretty much everybody thinks rabbits love carrots. And when you see one, you're like, would you like a carrot?
He doesn't
be
even,
careful.
Even we give him carrots, he doesn't really.
Yeah, what, does he,
love
what does he eat? What does he like?
Well, I do have these dried carrot sticks that I get at the House Rabbit Society. But look, here's what's funny about what they say about rabbits is you're only supposed, like the House Rabbit Society, they'll probably they'll bar me for this. You're only supposed to give him like one little treat a day.
Yes.
We give him like 20. Maybe that's a slight exaggeration. He's fine.
And where
if he kicks
well.
If he kicks a little early from a heart attack or something like that, he will have lived a good life.
And where is he on Instagram?
Oreo Smorio the Bunny. Yeah. Thank you, Ethan. Oh, Oreo Smorio the Bunny.
Last we checked, we were like a half a million
Instagram.
Followers, I think.
Whoops. That's Natasha Bedingfield way too loud. Yeah, at least maybe a couple million at this point. There you go. Wrapping suit. Did you do the random fact? Is that it?
That was it.
Thank God. I was a little thrown off. We're coming back with phone calls. It's Telephone Tuesday. We'll open up the line shortly. Yep, the phone lines are open right now. Ethan said, what do you want to take calls on? I said, I don't really know, but I do kind of know a little bit. But if you want to jump in here with a topic of your own, but I got this on the X formerly Twitter from someone, and this really is one of my pet peeves, and I'm wondering if we can't maybe go down the road here this afternoon of St. Louis or Missouri pet peeves. Not to ignore those of you on the Illinois side, maybe we can take some of those as
sure.
well. But here, there's a guy that said this, and he tagged the governor, Congresswoman Wagner, Senator Hawley, State Representative Justin Sparks, said I-44 between downtown St. Louis and Washington, Missouri, has piles of trash, discarded shipping plastic, wrecked tires, you name it, everywhere. Not show me state appropriate. Any chance we can get a cleanup? And I think that that's a very good question because
it is.
I don't know. And I said this a pet peeve because I notice things like this. And typically, when I come off of 44, when he says 44 all the way to Washington, that kind of surprises me because I feel like I see more of it toward downtown. But when I exit off of Lafayette, you can, you know, that big interchange where people are coming either onto 55 or they're coming off 55 or they're going to 44, or they're on 44. There's a big plot of land in the middle of all that where there's, you know, grass and I've seen homeless tents there as well. And it's just a bunch of trash. I mean, the amount of trash that I see on our roads sometimes to me is really staggering. And I mentioned, Sue, you know, when I lived in Jeffco before I moved to the house that I was in off of Romaine Creek, I would drive that road every day. And I'm just going to tell you something. It is what it is. I'm just calling it like I see it. There is a difference between Jeffco and St. Louis County when it comes to trash. And in Jeffco, on Romaine Creek, there was so much trash that I actually had to organize this with my neighborhood association. And usually there was like one or two women that would come out and I'd do it. And I'd grab a bunch of black plastic bags. I'd have my orange hunting vest on so
you.
No one would hit me. And I'd have gloves on. And I filled up like 8 to 10 Jeez. Trash bags, sometimes on my own. And then I'd throw them in the back. I had a Jeep at the time. I'd throw them back in the Jeep, and I can't even remember where I had to dump them because I don't think I could put it all in my trash. That's actually a valid question. But it's just unbelievable. You know what I would find more than anything else?
Oh, no.
Those little tiny bottles of booze because people were drinking either on the way to work or on the way home from work, just tossing them on the side. But just everything, like, you know, big styrofoam cups or cans. I'm shocked by how many people are comfortable with simply opening up their window and throwing out, whether it's a bag of trash, a little bit of trash. I still see it on a regular basis. So I don't know what
the
answer is, but it's outrageous. It really is. So that's one idea here this afternoon. If you'd like to chime in here with pet peeves, whether they're road-related or otherwise, 314-241-9797, 241-9797. I got to find out which calls because Ethan has to tell me when the callers are on the line. The other thing I would say about roads, you know, one thing I noticed, I don't know if you've noticed this around when you drive in the city, you don't go further out into the county, but there's so many road signs that you can't even read what the damn road is. I think if you go down Highway 40, if you go to Highway 40 to, you know, 270, mm-hmm. like if you're not from the area, you might get confused about this stuff.
Well, you know what? We have accidents out there fairly regularly, and I wonder if that's not part of it. Same thing. Let's say you were driving eastbound on 6440 and right around the Interbelt and then Hanley and those on-ramps that come from Hanley, and then if you get to the right, then suddenly you're on the on-ramp from Big Bend. If you aren't from here, I don't know how they do it. But there are accidents at Big Bend all the time.
241-9797. Jump on in here this afternoon. 314-241-9797. It doesn't have to be on, you know, that particular topic. I was thinking about, you know, taking calls on Mahmoud Khalil and his deportation. I didn't know if people would respond to that. You know, this is the fifth anniversary, too, of COVID and all the nonsense there. So there might be some thoughts on that terrible anniversary as well. But let's go to the phones here. Mike, you're on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I was just wondering if what your thoughts might be if we took the illegal aliens or illegal immigrants of adult age males and made them serve maybe a 4-year stint in the military to get us some skin in the game so that they could become U.S. citizens afterwards at the 4-year stint and maybe do the GI Bill back where they could get maybe some sort of funding for further education.
I think it's an interesting idea, but here's this may piggyback on something because someone out there might have to tell us what the current situation. We're told on a regular basis that there are people who might not be documented that do serve in the military. So I don't know the extent of that anymore. But look, I like where you're going with that from the very reason, if for only one reason, that I'd like a little assimilation. You know, I was thinking about this. If any of us would move to another country, I'd really feel pretty bad if I didn't know the language. If I go to Spain, if I go to France, I'm going to try to learn the language. Maybe I don't have that within my first year, but you know, maybe 5 years down the road, I'm going to be a little able to communicate. That does not happen. There's no assimilation, and I don't know how you force it, but that might be one area where you can get sort of creative. But thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. Tom, you're on 97.1 FM Talk.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the trash topic you were referring to earlier.
Yes, sir.
And I agree, it's just a problem pretty much everywhere in Missouri, not just on a particular highway like 44. 270, the interchange of 270 and 170 or I-70 is awful. I don't get it. Why people just throw, like you said, Mark, trash out there? Where's it coming? I tell you what, a lot of times when I'm driving on the highway and trash trucks are going to the dump, there's stuff constantly flying out of trash.
Well, that's what I was going to point out. That's one of the issues, is that you have, you know, things falling out of the trash trucks. And then when the wind kicks up, look, like it did last week and even yesterday wasn't too calm, I think this stuff gets kicked everywhere. But there are areas that are worse than others. That's part of the point, I think, of the person who you know, tweeted at me.
Are there any penalties for doing that, like along the interstate?
Sure.
If you just throw a cup out, but nobody
enforces it. Like, I have signs even around my area where I live right now that said, you know, no littering, no trash dumping, punishable by up to $1,000 in fines. Well, when's the last time that's even happened, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Well,
yeah,
thanks.
It's impossible to patrol that, but it's like, I don't know if our state needs to do like a massive marketing campaign to just try and guilt people into not doing that anymore, or... Mm. But it's definitely a problem. It's really sad.
It is sad.
It
and,
is.
You know, every once in a while, I'll still see, and this mainly happens in the city, but not always, I'll see someone in the parking lot of like a Walmart or a Target or something like that, and they're cleaning out their car. They just throw it right there on.
Oh.
I even picked up some stuff today. I was at the High Ridge Walmart, and there was a Styrofoam QT cup that was just there that someone placed down. There was a trash can that was approximately 10 feet away from that.
Yes,
and I placed it in the trash can. It's not that hard if you just give it a little try. Jerry, you're on 97.1 FM Talk. Good afternoon.
Hey, I wanted to kind of make the same point. Everybody has to gas up their car. So, you know, when you're at the gas station, there's a trash can. Please use them. That's what we have them there for.
But people don't do it. I mean, what used to be the real aggravator to me, and I think it's just that people aren't smoking as much, but a lot of people would just take their ashtrays out of their cars and
dump
it on the ground.
Oh,
right?
My
just
gosh.
Dump it on the ground. They don't care what's going on. I've gotten into a situation a couple times, and I've really tried to back off from this because I don't recommend road rage. But you know, Sue, I'm a little type A. Might be an understatement. And I've seen people do this, and I want to chase them down.
I know.
And a couple of times I've tried, because then I want to say, what the hell are you thinking about? That's not going to do any good, and it's probably just going to get me shot.
We all have that urge.
Yes. But thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's see. Well, I might have just hung up on someone, and I didn't mean to do that. Hey, Ethan, if Jerry calls back, put him to the front of the line, because I might have. Sorry, Jerry. Let's see here. Tim, you're on 97.1 FM Talk. Go ahead.
Hey, how y'all doing?
I'm doing good.
Well, first of all, as I was talking to Ethan, you know, I don't understand why the Dems are arguing with Trump trying to save taxpayer money. He's not only that, but then, you know, he's just trying to do exactly what the Democrats were trying to do 15 years ago. Protect our border, put up a wall.
The Democrats were trying to do that 15 years ago?
They're the ones that approved the money for the wall back when Clinton was in office. I'm sorry, that's going way back.
I got you. Yeah, I see what your point is. Look, there are a lot of things I even saw a bunch of clips today that Fox was running. I didn't have time to grab the audio, but all these clips from like 2010 and 2011 with Obama out there talking about the size of the federal government and reducing the size and scope and cutting programs. But the legacy media has conveniently forgotten all of that stuff, right? Kevin, you're on 97.1 FM Talk. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, the thing that bothers me and gets me upset driving around St. Louis is all the graffiti on the bridges, the buildings. Mm-hmm. I mean, I drive on 70, and it's the same names over and over. And I think about, you know, if I didn't live here and I was coming from out of town and saw this,
it's awful.
I mean, I tend to avoid areas that have a ton of graffiti on it when I'm out of town. So it makes the town just look awful.
It does. If you're going into downtown,
yep,
you can see it on the highways. Look, we have, that would be 14th and Shoto, that gas station that's no longer open over there, right?
Yep.
But it's graffiti,
yep,
and it's just dilapidated.
Yep.
Now, that's right across from Peabody Housing Complex, which I think they're actually renovating some of those right now. But it's just so frustrating because you're not going to get the state to take care of all of this. This is why we have some portions of roads that are adopted. And by the way, I'm not risk averse to doing my part in helping out. And you do have, Charlie Brennan was always really good every year promoting a big trash cleanup. Odyssey, we've had,
yes,
you know, instances where we've gone out as an organization and cleaned up parks and stuff like that as well. So sometimes it takes teamwork along those lines. But if you do have any pet peeves about St. Louis or the roads or anything, jump on in here. It's Telephone Tuesday on the Mark Reardon Show, 241-9797. You're calling this Telephone Tuesday because we're taking phone calls in the 4 o'clock hour. I think I hung up on Jerry before, so let's see if we can start with him. We have time for just a few more. David Strom from hotair.com coming up in the next hour on 97.1 FM Talk. All right, Jerry, sorry for hanging up on you. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, you know, I'm good. I guess that'd be my new pet peeve, would be getting hung up on, but I'll let you pass.
All right, thank you.
But the other thing, you know, you talk about people dumping out the cigarettes and stuff, and, you know, think about the people that are working at the gas station that has to clean that up, you know, that are, you know, leaving that around. They take pride in keeping their lots clean. I work for one of the local companies, and we see that all the time where people leaving a mess in a lot or destroying a bathroom, and it's just no fun for the employees.
Well, that's a great point because
they
do get stuck with it all the time. And I don't even really want to talk about the bathrooms because that will put this conversation into a completely different territory that we might not want to go to.
Yep, I'm sure we don't.
They're just disgusting, unfortunately. That's why it'll be very interesting to see what Fred has to do when he's in Japan, if he's, you know, paying some money to use the toilet. John, you're on 97.1 FM Talk. Go ahead. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. Hey, so, you know, the thing I've noticed the past couple of years is, you know, driving around, because I live in St. Peter's, I work in the city, and, you know, you see mattresses and stuff on the side of the road.
Yes.
These people, they're not throwing stuff out the window. They're stopping and dumping like they're at the local landfill.
It's true.
And I do see
it's
mattresses. I guess I assume with the mattresses that they fly off a truck, but maybe they are just dumping them, right?
No, because these things look like trash, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I'm on my way to work, and, you know, Friday there's nothing, and go by on Monday, and there's a place where there's been a bunch of stuff dumped. But if you want to see a real prime example of it, because, see, I drive a truck for a living,
mm-hmm,
go to a truck stop parking lot and go drive back where the trucks are at. It will blow your mind.
Dang.
The amount of trash
I don't think I want to see
that thrown out there.
Yeah.
I
don't think I want to
know.
And, you know, and I, by the way, I get the truckers have things, and I appreciate what they do, but one of the things that people say every once in a while is when you're cleaning up the side of the road, the truckers sometimes do their thing when they're driving and they throw bags of pee into the ditches, whether it's, you know,
no.
Yeah, that's like I'm not saying it happens on a regular basis, but I know that when I've talked about this topic before, people have relayed those stories.
Holy Toledo.
That's kind of gross.
Ooh, right. I was happy in my ignorance.
Greg, you get the final word here. How are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Is that me?
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
Hey, so you were talking about the little liquor bottles. So as a recovering alcoholic and somebody who drove and drank in my job for years, I will tell you that most alcoholics will stop and buy the mini liquor bottles, and they know that having them in the car is a open container.
Yeah.
So they will chuck them out.
Oh.
Somebody who has done this for years and now in recovery, I'm telling you, that is why that is like that.
No, no, I get it. And, you know, this is, some of this is near and dear to my heart, and I haven't had any alcohol since 1990. So I know that that's what people are doing. And unfortunately, they're drinking in the morning and they don't want to be caught at work. So I get that that's certainly an aspect of it that is very real. But I appreciate the calls. Hey, I think we did pretty well today.
Not bad.
Yeah, not too bad, because I'm kind of experimenting with this. When we come back, David Strom from HotAir.com, who's always one of my favorite guests, has written about a lot of different things, including some things related to the media. Media and media malfeasance. We've touched on some of that earlier today with the intro to CBS News last night. Dave Strom will highlight some of this. Also, we're, you know, Fred's not here. He's a big sports guy too, but Ethan and I are really geeked up on the NCAA tournament and even the NIT tournament. SLU is in the NIT. We have Chris Gervino, dear friend of mine from back when I went to journalism school, who's really been an important part of the Mizzou basketball and football broadcast team for a long time. He's going to give us a preview of the Drake game. I think tomorrow night we have Joe Pott, who's going to, he's on the KMOX side of the building, but he also does play-by-play for SIU Edwardsville. And we got the guy from Drake coming up as well. We'll get a Drake perspective on the show a little bit later as well on 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there. We got one more hour to go. David Strom plus an audio cut of the day in the next hour. When we left the air in the last hour, we were really starting to get fascinated by the landing of the astronauts from the International Space Station. After being stranded for months, they splashed down into the ocean. And let's dip into this a little bit. This is Fox is actually covering NASA TV. So it's the NASA TV, and I think Brett Baer might be talking here a little bit. Let's find out.
A bunch of different scientific research that was done on Mark and I, and you know, most of the results were as they kind of.
I think they're talking with his guest right now. I was hoping that we were going to get play by play, but I think we might have missed that, Sue, at the top of the hour, because it was still coming down with the parachutes when we broke, and then it splashes down into the ocean, and all of a sudden, like three different boats start racing toward it. They were probably tracking it in the sky. They knew a general area, but to your point, and that's a vast, vast area in the ocean that they had to go rescue this crew from. But what do you think they feel right now, finally being down after Joe Biden left them stranded up there?
I mean, and that poor woman, and maybe she doesn't care and it's just me projecting, but if I had to be on TV with my hair straight up for 9 months.
Yeah,
that, I mean, and they were only supposed to be up there for a brief amount of time. Nobody was prepared. I mean, the gall of him to leave them there for political reasons.
It really is quite
shocking.
Something. And you can't really describe it any way except for that, because that's exactly what happened. Hey, our friend David Strom from HotAir.com is back with us on this Tuesday evening. How are you, Mr. Strom?
I'm here with a sunny disposition in honor of Sonny, who just came back.
How about that? I mean, can you even imagine being stuck up there because the other
Jeez.
President didn't want you to come down because it might look good for the other guy?
Well, I can imagine it from Joe Biden and his indifference to everybody else. I mean, you know, most people don't know this. I mean, they weren't just up there for, you know, I think it was 7 to 10 days was what they were scheduled. They went up with no luggage, no supplies.
Yep.
And it's just remarkable. I mean, obviously, the space station has things like, you know, enough food and water. But it's not a hotel, so they didn't have toothbrushes, toothpaste, changes of underwear, changes of clothes, any of that until the next supply ship went up. And that was entirely due to Joe Biden, who didn't want Elon Musk to look good.
How do you, I guess you can't really do laundry on the space station, right? You just have to go to the next pair of underwear or whatever you might have available. I didn't really think about
that.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I know everything is tougher up there. I mean, you're right. I don't think doing laundry is an easy task up there. And I think people get, and showers are very difficult, washing yourself. You don't have a shower. You have to give yourself a sponge bath or, you know, find a pretty nurse to do it for you, which is pretty difficult up there.
That might be a little tough up there, yeah.
You guys, the internet says they don't do laundry in space. They wear clothes till they're too dirty or smelly and then discard them. And then they're sent back to Earth with other waste.
And, you know, I know that they train for situations that are along the lines of psychological challenges, but let's face it, you go up there, I don't care how well you're trained, you think you're coming back down within a few days, and then you're stuck up there for months. That's got to get to you a little bit, right?
Yes.
Well, and more than that, actually, you know, Mitch, was it Mitch or Mark? I forget his name. His daughter posted on Instagram, and most people hadn't noticed it, but this was a few weeks ago, how much it has hurt her. You know, he missed her sports meetings, her birthday, you know, and she's just a teenager, and she was very upset about this. And again, nobody in the administration cared. I mean, it was 100% about making Trump and Elon Musk look bad. I mean, Elon had, you know, offered a rocket, offered to take them off. Butch had said, oh, yeah, no, he did. And, you know, so there's no dispute about what was offered.
No, there's not. When I was watching this, too, remember this a couple of weeks ago, we were watching the interview, and I swear to God, I thought it was almost a setup where the astronaut was going to say, well, that didn't really happen. But he said the opposite.
Yeah.
Yep, that's exactly what happened.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it really is appalling. But then we're talking about, you know, a president or former president or a pudding brained guy or whatever you want to call him, who has always been calculating and nasty and stupid. I mean, the image that was created of Joe Biden by the Pravda media had nothing to do with who he really was. And now you've got, you know, reporters out there just, you know, Chuck Todd talked about what an awful man Joe Biden was.
Yeah, now
and
he says it. Now that
now
he's off of NBC and Meet the Press, he can admit to everybody what he knew for the longest time. Now, on the topic of media, David Strom, let's get into that. I opened the show talking about one of your columns. We're going to talk about Tulsi Gabbard and the AP because I think that's an important story.
Yep.
But did you notice, this was CBS last night in their lead to the news.
On this St. Patrick's Day, as millions of Americans celebrate their Irish heritage, recent events remind us that the Irish were among the first immigrants to be targeted in deportation crackdowns.
In the mid-1800s, New York and Massachusetts enforced policies to have Irish immigrants rounded up and deported.
I don't think I need to play any more than that. That gives you the flavor. That's how they started their newscast on St. Patrick's Day, with going back to the 1880s, making an analogy that really has no connection to what's happening today with migrants who are here that are murderers, criminals, dragging fentanyl in. We've made it very clear that we're not talking about everyone who comes across the border. But let's face it, it's a significant issue and it's an invasion. And they want to act like it's just like the 1880s with the Irish, Dave.
Oh, well, I mean, the media, you know, long ago gave up any pretense to being anything other than a propaganda outlet. And, you know, what's remarkable to me, I get these emails from, you know, my liberal friends and family, and they're sending me stories that come from the media. And, you know, they still believe this. And we're talking about, you know, Harvard grads. We're talking about academics.
Otherwise smart people, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I've given up asking them why they believe this, you know, because, you know, how many times can you be lied to and go back to, you know, they're like battered wives, you know, they keep
and you know, you don't, what I would say to them is you don't have to believe a conservative talk show host or a conservative writer at hotair.com. Just Google Uri Berliner from NPR and read what he had to say a year ago.
Oh, and, you know, look up, you know, what was this, 10 or more years ago in the Atlantic, there was this story, another trash publication now. There was this story from an AP reporter who was based in Gaza, I believe, who revealed that the Associated Press shared offices with Hamas. And, you know, there's just, you know, these people are so corrupt now, and that's why they left the Associated Press. They just couldn't take it anymore. I'm sharing offices with terrorists. You know, they're propagandists. You know,
well,
going
back, talk about the comm today, because this is yeah. important, because what they did, and you put this into great perspective, because we explained this to the audience. We've tried to do this because the AP has been in the news. But the AP, this is a bigger story than just one news organization, because they distribute content all over the planet. And they write about a situation with Tulsi Gabbard and Putin and Trump. Right. What happened here, David?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll tell you what happened, and you're right. I really would like to talk about why it's so important. The Associated Press wrote a story claiming that Tulsi Gabbard said that Trump and Putin were very good friends. That was their headline. And, you know, the whole thrust of this was to add to the, you know, Russia, Russia, Russia narrative that Trump is a Putin puppet. I mean, we've heard it all for a decade.
Right.
Then after it's sitting out there for a few hours, gets distributed to thousands of news outlets, was probably broadcast on thousands of newscasts. You know, on radio stations, gets into the TV because it's just reported as news because they got it from the AP, which feeds news to everybody. I'm sure you have an AP feed there.
Of course, yeah. KMOX does down the hall. CNN does. Fox does. Everybody is pretty much forced to subscribe to the AP to get a lot of their content.
Yes, because, you know, as much as you think all these news outlets are out there doing their own news, that's not the case. You can only focus on a very small number of things. And so if you're going to cover issues nationally or internationally or just what's happening in Kansas City over there, you don't have a reporter there. You go to the AP and they tell you what's happening.
And in this case, they told you what was happening, but they lied about it.
They lied about it. You know, in fact, it was about the Indian Prime Minister Modi is a good friend of Trump. Well, that's a big difference. You know, it's not even remotely close. But here we are in the midst of, you know, ceasefire negotiations. The Democrats are pushing the Russia stuff again. Everybody in the media is pushing it. And this is just one more data point that buttresses a completely false narrative.
Absolutely. Because what happens is they blast it out. It gets distributed everywhere. Newspapers run it. They put it on their websites. Broadcasters probably put it in newscasts. And then last night at 10:42, they come out with this. The Associated Press has withdrawn its story about U.S. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard saying President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are very good friends. Gabbard was talking about Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The AP will publish a corrected version of the story. Well, it's pretty much too late because all the stories are already out there, and you're not going to be able to, if they correct the story, that doesn't mean that everyone else that pushed out the content has a correction. It's still lingering out there.
Oh, absolutely. And you know how what corrections are like. The fact is that there's no news outlet that likes printing corrections. When they do print corrections, they're in small print. It's not like every TV station is going to blare out, hey, we lied to you, but it's someone else's fault. You know, so it's just going to be hanging out there. It has already been broadcast to everyone. It is pure Pravda propaganda. That's all it is. And, you know, it goes deeper than that because the AP controls at most news outlets what language is used.
Right. They have the workplace. So, right. We've talked about this. They have a style guide, and you are pretty much, they would say it's encouraged, but you're pretty much mandated if you work in a newsroom in this country to go by the AP style guide. And they love, you know, I don't know that they use Latinx like the LA Times, but they come very close.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you wonder why did they say you know, a woman firebombed a Tesla place instead of, you know, a man who it was, you know, the answer is that's in the AP style book. And, you know, it is, in fact, this is really what the fight with the Associated Press is about up at the White House. When people think that it's just about the name of the Gulf of Mexico or the Gulf of America, that is just the tip of the iceberg. It really is about the AP shaping the news by shaping the language and the terms that are used. You know, instead of saying terrorist, you say freedom fighter.
Right.
You know, you start going down the list and suddenly you see it's all about shaping a narrative. And the AP is just fundamentally corrupt. Even if many of the reporters don't want to do it that way. But these are the rules.
Yeah, they're the worst. There's no doubt about it, which is why, you know, that is an important story because it affects so many different outlets. Now, David Strom from HotAir.com is here. I really haven't spent a ton of time in the last week about the anniversary, the 5-year anniversary of COVID. But I do think it's important to revisit a lot. And I know that you wrote about this. There's a book out that shows how much we screwed up. Now we pretty much know the lab leak theory that was just completely discounted. In fact, David, when you wrote about this on HotAir.com, there was a link to the New York Times piece that says Senator Tom Cotton repeats fringe theories of coronavirus origins. Scientists have dismissed suggestions that Chinese government was behind the outbreak, but it's kind of a tale that gains traction among those who see China as a threat. Except 5 years later, that's pretty much what happened. It was not a wet market. It was created in a lab. It got out. Now we know that Fauci lied. They all lied. And it's too late because we've screwed up these kids forever and messed up the economy. So there you go. Congratulations,
oh, yeah. Well,
America.
The New York Times, the chief reporter for COVID, called it a racist conspiracy theory. And, you know, she tweeted out that someday we're going to look back on this and finally admit that this was only about racism. And then 5 years later, the New York Times is printing, well, we were lied to. It's like, no, you weren't. You knew. I knew. I mean, I knew in May 2020. And there has been this accumulation of evidence up to and including the fact that six intelligence agencies concluded, you know, including the Germans, the Japanese, the UK, all of their leaders were informed by their intelligence communities that it came from a lab. And not just that, but that it was engineered. And so there was a worldwide cover-up, and that cover-up included the mainstream media. You know, there is, I mean, all of these big news organizations have deep ties into the intelligence community. You see the leaks all the time. You know, they pick and choose what they want to tell you, but they're very deeply connected. And it was already known back in 2020, 2021, that Fauci had gone to the CIA and they had concluded it came from a lab, and he convinced them to say otherwise. So none of this, to anyone who is, you know, has been following this story for a long period of time, is surprised by this. But all the media folks are pretending to be surprised. Oh my gosh, we were lied to.
I like,
no, you weren't.
John Stewart was really good on this, and he said, and he was pretty early in on, yeah, you know, some of this is common sense. Like, oh my God, there's been an outbreak of chocolatey goodness near Hershey, Pennsylvania. What do you think happened? Right? What was it? Same thing. The novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Well, we could ask the Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. Maybe that's where we should start, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was so obvious. And again, by 2021, we had documents of how the EcoHealth Alliance, the people who they directly funded it, we gave them the money. And probably the Brits did as well. You know, USAID gave them money. And we have documents of grant applications where they describe the creation of COVID. They didn't call it COVID, but they described exactly what they were going to do and, you know, what the goal was. And, you know, everybody in the establishment just looked at that and said, well, that's a coincidence. It's like, no, it's not. I mean, quit BSing us. But it's not until the New York Times prints it that any of my liberal friends believe it. And then they say, well, it was with good intentions. It's like, no, it's not. The reason why they did this is very clear. The government funded it. Nobody, no bureaucrat wants to come out and say, hey, I just killed 25 million people. So they hid it. I mean, it was pure CYA, and that's all it ever was. They funded it. They knew it was wrong at the time. The funding under Obama, all right? So Obama banned it. And then what happened was when the Trump administration came in, they were, you know, getting up to speed those first few months. And during that time, Fauci turned the government funding back on and, you know, it created COVID. And Wuhan, by the way, is doing this another time. They're working on other viruses in unsafe conditions. So don't be surprised if we see the same thing all over again.
Look, this, I still think the aftermath, all this cover-up stuff has been so undercovered by the legacy media. The New York Times actually had a pretty good piece in the other day about how we were misled. There's a new book out that pretty much puts this into great perspective as well. But let's face it, you know, in the piece that Zeynep Tufekci wrote in the New York Times talking about some of this, let's not forget you had, she points out, you had no fewer than 77 Nobel laureates and 31 scientific societies that were lined up to, you know, basically defend that Institute of Virology. And essentially, that's not where it came from. This is why I go on my rants all the time about the experts, because my goodness, do the experts get it wrong? 77 Nobel laureates were that dumb.
Yeah, well, 97% of scientists agree with the people who give them money.
Yes, I know about that.
You know, I come from a family of scientists. I mean, both my parents were physicists. But I wrote about, a high energy particle physics advisory board under the Biden administration put a gender studies professor onto the funding committee. And she's talking about Einstein proofs that all morality is relative, right. And, you know, science is a white male thing. And these are the people who are distributing money for physics. And if it's in physics, particle physics, you know, we're talking about, you know, things that are so technical and so expensive, by the way. I mean, the most expensive science in the world, other than putting up space telescopes, is building the superconducting super colliders out there. You're talking about billions and billions of dollars, and you've got a gender studies alphabet ideology person funding it. And do you think that if someone is trying to get a grant for $1.5 billion, they're not going to bow down to that?
Of course they are. Look, my friend John Seiler, who's been great, he writes at the City Journal, David, and he has been one of the people, really the champions and the heroes, investigating and uncovering some of this DEI stuff. He's got a great story in City Journal. He's going to join me tomorrow night. How a lot of this, they're you know, with the DEI bans and the things that have happened, they're coming up with very creative ways to skirt the DEI bans and some of the stuff that they're doing. And again, it all is identity politics. It's not favoring people who are experts in science or the best and the brightest in science. It's all about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And they're trying to get around some of the stuff that the Trump administration is doing, and it's really disgusting. But John's done a great job of highlighting that and exposing it. David Strom, always great to have you on. I appreciate it here on a Tuesday evening. We'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
All right.
Chris Gervino with a preview of the Mizzou Tigers against Drake coming up. He's a member of the Mizzou Broadcast Network. We'll probably have audio cut of the day coming up as well. Yep, we're geared up for our second stop at Assumption this weekend. Then we head to Queen of All Saints the following week, St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood on the 4th of April, and on the 11th, Ott's Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois. We have Brian Kilmeade coming this weekend. He may be on the show tomorrow.
Ethan is still working that out either tomorrow or Thursday. Brian will be with us Saturday night. Tickets available at the Factory. You can also go to briankilmeade.com, get VIP tickets if you're interested in those. That will include like a meet and greet, and you get to get a copy of his book that's signed as well. Big basketball week. In fact, March Madness gets kicked off tonight with these play-in games tonight and tomorrow. And then Mizzou plays on Thursday evening. It's a primetime game. Oh, the Astronauts
I'm sorry. I actually gasped.
Wait a second. We may need to, let's see if we can dive into this here because we've been chronicling this. So hold the Mizzou thoughts for now. They splash landed not too long ago. The capsule is being opened up right now, and we're hoping that the astronauts are inside.
It's open for the first time since September.
Wow.
You have SpaceX crew members that are opening the hatch and then kind of crawling into the capsule right now.
We can see some of the protective equipment there that was brought into frame that will help protect the edge of the side hatch. One, from any potential damage. Oh, we can see the recovery crew member there taking photos of the side hatch seal. This is part of the standard operation for recovery. These photos will get saved into our procedure.
This is all being broadcast on NASA TV.
Protective frame around the side hatch. This helps to ensure that the side hatch itself, the edges of it, incur no damage while crew members are coming out from the spacecraft.
This landed, say it landed about an hour ago, Sue?
Yeah, maybe even. Yeah, that's probably right.
If you missed it, there was also a recovery team member that went inside. So there are now five people on board the Dragon spacecraft.
Wouldn't you want to just get unbuckled real quick and get the heck out of there?
Can you imagine how buckled in they are?
I know, they must be. And it was what? It was like 17-hour return trip, right? Do you sleep during that?
Man,
what do you do?
I don't think so.
I don't know if you
could. And if you are just joining us, it has not yet even been an hour since Crew 9 splashed down off the coast of Tallahassee, Florida at 2:57 p.m. Pacific time. The crew is now on board the recovery vessel Megan, and the hatch is open. The next major milestone that we'll see is when the crew will actually egress or exit the spacecraft. But before that, they'll continue to, the recovery personnel, rather, will continue to install that protective area around the hatch and then remove the footrests. So we're a couple minutes away from seeing the crew.
Well, we'll keep you posted on that, but that's pretty fascinating.
Wow.
We can feature something in Audio Cut of the Day. I was beginning to talk about basketball. We have SLU in the NIT, SIU Edwardsville that's in the big dance, and Mizzou plays Drake, and the Drake story is quite something. It's a Cinderella story that the nation
Cinderella
may latch
story.
On to because they're going to talk about Drake more than Mizzou. But let's talk about Mizzou right now with my friend Chris Trevino. He's been a longtime member of the Mizzou football and basketball broadcast team in Columbia, Missouri. Gervino, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing well. You?
I'm good. I feel like we were just chatting in December about the Mizzou bowl game, and I remember saying something like, I think this Missouri Tiger team is going to be pretty good. Now, I never really thought they'd have the season that they did up until about 3 weeks ago, and maybe that's my first question, Chris. You know, this was a team that legit looked like they could be a Final Four team. They might be able to beat any team in the country, and they really struggled in the last couple of weeks. Is it because these SEC teams figured them out a little bit? I mean, we know the competition is tough, but what would you say about the last couple of weeks heading into this weekend?
Well, I think word does get out, and obviously videotape gets out, so everything's on TV anymore within the SEC, which was a great league. I think you look at it, clearly the problem for Missouri down the stretch was its defense. They just really struggled defensively, gave up about 90 points or so on average over the last half dozen games or so. So they've really got to straighten that out here going forward. But you know, you mentioned they've had a really good season. They've beaten some really good teams, i.e. Florida and Kansas and Alabama along the way. Of course, the Gators just came back and got them in their last game at the SEC tournament. But Florida's the hottest and perhaps the best team in the country right now. So nothing to be ashamed of. A few things to tweak, and we'll see. It's like a new beginning. I'm glad they got the win over Mississippi State in Nashville just to kind of stop the bleeding. You know, they had to grind out, really earn a victory. So I think that helped as opposed to going in cold on a losing streak to the NCAA.
The one that really stings for me, Chris, is the Vanderbilt loss, because you had that game won. And, you know, so that one really gets to you. You know, you're facing good teams. But I'm with you on Thursday, because they really needed to win that game. They keep Mark Mitchell out. Let's talk about him a little bit, because, look, I don't know if you can beat Florida Friday night. They are one of the best teams, and they may win this whole damn thing. But they keep Mark Mitchell out for precautionary reasons. I love that because, you know, like you said, it's a fresh start. But what do you know about that injury? Is it just something they were trying to rest up?
Yeah, they said all along it's a precautionary move, and I think he's going to be fine. You know, he was there with the team at the game on the bench and was up and walking around, looked fine. I certainly don't pretend to be a doctor or have the answers just on site. But they said at the time when they told us it was precautionary, Mark wanted to play, so certainly he felt he was ready and able to play. But I'm with you. Smart move. Keep him rested for the ones that really, really count now going forward.
I want to talk about the matchup with Drake, but let's just talk about the SEC and this incredible conference this year. And I was watching on Thursday night, Chris, as Coach Gates, you know, took the stage with the SEC announcing crew, and he made the plea and the case for 14 teams getting in. I don't know that that's exactly why 14 teams got in, but look, I think it was appropriate that the SEC gets 14 in, and obviously there's a couple of programs out there shaking their head, but this was an incredible conference this year.
Never seen anything like it. I've been lucky and blessed to do this for a long time, but never seen a conference this deep and this strong. And I understand now that it's 16 teams in this conference, so they're mega conferences in terms of size and the number of teams. But I can go back and remember the 1989-90 season, the 1990 Big Eight season, when you had Missouri, Kansas, and Oklahoma all ranked in the top five nationally. They took turns three consecutive weeks being number one in the country, Mizzou, KU, OU. And that was incredible, three of eight teams in the league sharing number one week after week after week. But in terms of this many teams in a national tournament, you're talking 14 of 68. It's unbelievable. And these teams are so good. It was really a pleasure to watch. I'm glad I didn't have to coach and try to win these games, but for sheer entertainment value and seeing so many great teams and future NBA stars, wow.
Yeah, well, even the Oklahoma-Kentucky game, you go back, you know, if you heard the announcers before that, it was almost like, hey, OU barely belongs in the building against Kentucky. They're going to win it all, and they bring them down to, you know, a half-second shot, and Kentucky wins, and then they don't fare very well on Sunday. So, really, I know that anything can happen, certainly moving forward, because there are a lot of talented teams, but let's talk about the Drake Bulldogs just a little bit. Here's my prediction, all right, Trevino? Take it for what it's worth, okay. And I'm always wrong. But I said this on Monday because I hear all this upset talk, and I know we've been talking with Frank Cusimano here about Drake and, you know, how these players came from, you know, from St. Joseph and Northwest Missouri State. So I get it, and they've got a great resume. But the Tigers, by double digits, F this upset talk. They're in the upper echelon of the SEC, and this team is in the MVC. So that's my position. What do you say?
Well, you make it sound so simple and easy. I'm sure Missouri would take that. Honestly, I think they'd just take a one-point win at this point of the game. But, no, you know, I mean, a couple of things. Obviously, Drake is really good. 30-3 is extremely impressive. They've played together in a system, had a lot of success at Division II, and now, I mean, they dominated the Missouri Valley, winning the regular season and tournament titles. So, it's a formidable team that holds opponents to 58 points per game. And yet, of course, Missouri, coming from the powerful SEC, is favored, is the better seeded team in the tournament, and you know, should win the game, but that doesn't mean it's automatic. We've been around long enough to see these tournaments over many years. There always are a few upsets in the lesser rounds. I think Drake's pretty good. I've seen them play. I mean, they're a capable team, certainly, not just against Missouri, against anyone. So the good news is, because they've been picked by many people already to be the Cinderella story before a ball's been put in the air, they certainly ought to have Missouri's attention and respect. They really should. And I think they will. And now the Tigers have to go out and execute. But they've got to be on their game, because I do think this is a really solid team. I've been able to see them a few times and been very impressed by Drake.
No, there's no doubt. And I'm not trying to disrespect the Missouri Valley Conference, but I do think that there is a different caliber of athlete in the SEC. And you know, usually, I know this isn't how it works, but typically, Chris, those big upsets come from the teams that nobody's really paying attention to. And that's when we're talking about an upset. You know, you mentioned that 88, 89, 90 period. I remember, here's an NCAA tournament story for you. I can't remember exactly what year, but I was very excited to go see Mizzou play in the NCAA tournament. And it was a Thursday, Saturday type deal. I couldn't make it on a Thursday. Tuesday. So we buy tickets in Indianapolis, Indiana for the second round, assuming that Mizzou's going to win this first round game against this team called Xavier that no one's ever heard of. And then we lost to Xavier. But I still went to Indianapolis, and that was the year that Indianapolis and Mark Alford won the national championship, or Indiana, rather. It was nice to see a national champion come through the Hoosier Dome. But you remember that. We lose to all these teams, right?
That was 1987,
yeah.
Mizzou against Xavier, Indianapolis, the first game of the entire tournament, 11 a.m. start. They had a great guard named Byron Larkin and a forward named Tyrone Hill, who played for years in the NBA. They beat Missouri, and the Tigers were the first team eliminated from the 1987 NCAA tournament in downtown Indianapolis.
Look at the history there, and then the history goes on from there with Northern Iowa and Norfolk State and all these things. But I'm thinking we're going to crack it into the Sweet 16. I'm thinking this team's going to be who they were a few weeks ago. Caleb Grill is going to have all this family there in Wichita. Gervino, you have a great time, and I think you're going into the second weekend. I'm going with that. I'm going to stay confident here.
I love it. The calendar is clear, so let's do it.
All right, Chris, take care. Have a good time. We have a rescue going on of these astronauts live. We may use that for audio cut of the day, but that's coming up next. We have been dipping into NASA TV. Sue, it's been really fun to see these astronauts pulled out of this capsule from SpaceX on the International Space Station for
really
9 months
fun.
Longer than they should have been. But let me just use this for audio cut of the day from NASA TV as they have brought most of the astronauts out of the capsule. It landed about an hour ago. It splashed into the ocean.
Our live coverage of their return. The Crew 9 mission began a little differently than usual since Butch Wilmore and...
All right, as this wraps up here...
Oh, well, Brett's going to take it.
Man.
He's going to take it because he's about to wrap up his show. But I wanted to use that because it was so cool, you know, seeing and hearing what has happened over the course of the last hour. But unfortunately, they didn't give me the best audio cut of the day. So we'll have something for tomorrow. You know, our local space expert, Mac Bradley, is fantastic on this stuff. And I have so many questions about the adjustment. I mean, you got smiles on the faces of these astronauts, but they can't really get up and walk right now.
Right.
So it's pretty crazy. Sue, have a great night.
You too.
We'll talk at 3 tomorrow.